From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 16th day of November, 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Hear from the statisticians in Illinois and Iowa about harvest progress in their states and check on the national numbers as well. Check in with last week's Nutrient Loss Reduction Conference and hear from Robert Bonney, who is heading up the conservation and climate programs at USDA. I asked him about mandates last week. By the way, he said no to that, but you'll want to hear it nonetheless. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast, too. That with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today finished at $5.71 a bushel. That was down 5.5 cents. The March at 577.5, 6.5 lower. And May corn at 581.75, down 6.75. January soybeans 6 lower, 1251.25. The settlement price. The March at 1263.25, down 5.5. And November down 4 at 1245.25. The bean meal at $367.50, down $4.20. The bean oil, $59.17, 97 cents lower. Wheat futures down 16 today at $8.10.25 in the December soft red. The hard red December at $8.20.75, down 15 and a quarter cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $136.10, down 22.5 cents for 100 pounds. Feeder cattle, the January contract, 80 cents higher at $159.27.5, and lean hogs $83.37.5, up $2.20. Crude oil at $80.68 a barrel, just about 20 cents lower. Diesel fuel or heating oil for the day at $2.42.7, up $2.09. And the wholesale price of gasoline, $0.04 higher at $2.29, even for the day. Wayne Nelson now joins us from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, to discuss what happened in Chicago. Yesterday, we were hopeful, Wayne, when I talked with Kurt Kimmel, that we'd have a turnaround Tuesday. That certainly was not the case. What are we hearing across the wire services and other places about what happened in Chicago today?
Well, you know, we traded lower most of the day. Yesterday, we had an explosion sort of on the idea that the lysine producing plants in China had shut down, and we saw quite a bit of activity in the meal yesterday. And that, of course, helped bring up the beans yesterday. And we were thinking a lot of that could, continue on over today. We went and hit some points at the when we drove down below the 1250 in the Jan beans, that put us under the 50-day moving average and turned things a little bit negative. But the biggest thing towards the end of the day was we got an email that says the Washington Post's Josh Rogan has cited multiple U.S. administration officials who say President Biden will soon announce a diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics. So that's we had that with Mr. Carter, and that did not go well.
It would not be good for agriculture, I would think, if the United States were to boycott the Olympics. We'll see how that turns out. I do want to talk about some fundamentals in the marketplace: wheat, inflation, and the supply chain. Let's start with wheat. It was really leading the market lower with those double-digit losses today. Is that because people are suddenly saying, hey, wait a second, wheat's grown everywhere across the planet and it's better than expected?
I think that that's part of it, Todd, and I think part of unwinding some spreads yesterday that sort of took that. The Minneapolis wheat took a bigger dump than the Chicago and Kansas City wheat did. And I think that basically it's got up to these high levels where it's just not it's not figuring into anybody's ration out there unless they really need it for food-grade wheat, for bread and whatever. So the wheat has sort of lost its luster here at these levels, but we still have the ideas that there are very tight stocks of it for right now. But you have to remember, the U.S. isn't really even competitive because we're higher than most of the other countries out there right now as our wheat price.
Underlying fundamentals are tied together of supply chain issues and inflation that has come along with some of those. Will they continue to be supportive of the marketplace?
Well, I think the inflation is not something that's going to go away fast. you know, there's very amount of things. We hear things out of the president's press secretary that don't seem to make any sense as far as them explaining inflation, how it's a good thing, but it isn't. And we need to have some, but we've got to have things, get things straightened out and get the supply chain working. One of the bad things was one of the rail lines had a washout up in Canada that went to one of their ports, and it looks like we're going to get some of their stuff is going to have to come south into the U.S. to hit until they can get that fixed. But all in all, the congestion at the ports, the supply chain and everything is a problem that definitely needs some work and some catching up on to get done.
How do you feel about the export market for soybeans at this time?
Well, you know, we've got the idea that the meal supply should be more added to or wanted by a lot of people now with the lysine out of it. We're seeing that the crush margins are up around $2 on the beans, and everybody is, you know, we're having actually a stronger amount of activity in the U.S. rather than just exporting our beans as for right now. But as we look there, you know, we are offering our beans about 50 cents higher than what it is out of South America. So they're taking over the world export market as of right now. I think as we look at it, we're about 16.5 million metric tons behind what the experts are this year versus last year, Todd.
And finally, before I let you go, soybeans in part of Indiana seem like they were lagging the last time I drove through that state. It's been two or three weeks now, maybe two. Have things caught up and are farmers worried?
I think that as far as the beans, a lot of those had come out in the last week or two here. So I don't think I think our harvesting was behind, but I think we've caught up pretty well on that. Most everybody, you know, within the 50-mile range around here is down to under 100 acres of crops to harvest. So I think we've caught up quite fast on that. Big machines go very pretty fast through these fields. Now, I do know a lot of cases where there's down corn, and a lot of guys are down to 40 acres. It might take them 2 or 3 days.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 91% of the corn crop around the nation has been harvested. The five-year average is 86%. 92% of the soybeans have been harvested. 93% is the five-year average. And the condition of the winter wheat crop is 39% good and 7% excellent, with 81% of the crop emerged and 94% of that crop sown. Now here are the statisticians with the updates from Illinois and Iowa.
This is Rebecca Alter, statistician. Variable precipitation slowed harvest activities in parts of Iowa. Field activities included harvesting, baling corn stalks, applying fertilizer and anhydrous, and fall tillage. Precipitation this week helped improve soil moisture levels slightly. 91% of Iowa's corn for grain has been harvested, 4 days ahead of the five-year average. Moisture content of field corn being harvested for grain was 17%. Farmers in south central Iowa have over 20% of their corn for grain yet to harvest. Iowa's soybean crop harvest is virtually complete at 97%. No issues with livestock were reported. Some cattle have been put out on corn stalks. For the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, this is Rebecca Alter.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Last week was warm and dry across Illinois. Temperatures averaged 46.3 degrees, and that was nearly 4 degrees above normal. Rainfall averaged 45 one-hundredths of an inch, and that was over 3-tenths of an inch below normal for this week. Soil temperatures on Sunday range from the upper 30s in northern Illinois to the mid-40s in southern parts of the state. Corn harvest advanced to 95% finished. That compares to 98 1 year ago and 92% for the five-year average. Soybean harvest reached 93% finished. compared to 99 last year and 96 normally. Winter wheat planting advanced to 86% finished compared to 99 last year and 96% for the five-year average. 71% of wheat acres have emerged compared to 85 normally. Wheat conditions improved to 1% poor, 11 fair, 68% good, and 20% excellent. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly crop progress updates. You know, last week I hosted the annual Nutrient Loss Reduction Conference, and during it was able to ask USDA Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy and Senior Advisor on Climate, Robert Bonney, a series of questions. The first addressed a common worry in the agricultural community that the climate change push by the Biden administration would infringe upon private property rights across working lands by imposing mandates restricting how working lands can be farmed and ranched. Bonney, the climate advisor, was pretty eager to answer that question.
I don't think so. I don't think it'd be a useful approach at all. I think it'd be counterproductive. And I'll tell you why. So there's so much diversity in agriculture, there's so much diversity in ranching and in forestry. It's hard to develop mandates that are appropriate across all those lands. And I don't think politically they'd work very well. And I don't think they'd work very well practically. Even now, where you see the best work happening, it's about incentive-based voluntary conservation. And I think ultimately that's how this has to work. And in fact, I think it's the best approach. I think those types of partnerships that we talk about aren't possible with an approach that is linked to mandates.
Do we currently have incentive-based programs for conservation?
Sure. We've got, you know, USDA right now has, depending on how you do the math, you know, $5 to $6 billion a year for conservation practices across the country, and all those programs I mentioned. You have the opportunity for new dollars there. As I mentioned, there's also growing interest from the private sector, and whether it's carbon markets or other things. So I do think there's real opportunity for significant financial investment in agriculture and forestry as a climate approach. And the job of USDA is to figure out how can we best facilitate that? How can we work with producers, with universities and others to make sure that not only we facilitate the adoption of those practices, but we also track the measurement, monitoring, verification, so we can look the public in the eye and say that there are real benefits there.
Are you confident that Washington, over the long haul, is willing to fund the majority of those programs, no matter which party might be in office?
So it's a good question. I would say generally there's strong bipartisan support for conservation programs. But I wouldn't for a minute suggest that the federal government and USDA is going to do this alone. When we put conservation programs on the ground now, they're cost share programs. We're sharing the cost with producers. Other times, other partners are coming in and putting dollars on the table as well. I also think that's why the new effort we've announced around the Climate Smart Partnership Initiative is important. How do we position agriculture to take advantage of that interest and consumer demand? How do we provide the tools that farmers need? And still, we're, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it's not that you put the government in the position of being a dictator, but you do put the government in the position of helping to facilitate these types of markets. And USDA does that all the time. There are all kinds of mechanisms in USDA where we're facilitating markets for commodity production. In this case, it's for climate smart commodities. And so I think in partnership with the private sector, there's significant opportunities to advance conservation across large landscapes.
Crop insurance is one of the programs that covers a large number of the working lands, more than 250 million acres in corn, soybeans, and wheat alone, if I remember the numbers correctly. Is there a requirement within crop insurance as it relates to conservation, or should there be?
So one of the things that we did as part of our pandemic assistance efforts earlier in the year was provide an incentive for producers enrolled in crop insurance to put cover crops on their land. And we provided an incentive only $5 an acre. We only had a 15-day window where producers could sign up. We got about 11 million acres into the program. So there are ways to think about how do you incentivize, whether it's cover crops or other things through crop insurance. Important thing about crop insurance, I think, is that it is a partnership between the private sector and USDA. We work closely with the with insurance, with folks in agriculture to make sure crop insurance works for producers and provides, you know, a valuable a risk management tool. So think as you think about crop insurance, that type of approach, the type of approach that we've already modeled, where you think about incentives like that is going to be critically important. Here again, if it doesn't work for agriculture on the ground, it won't work well for the climate. And so I think we want to look at ways that we can use incentive-based approaches like the one we've already used to scale adoption of climate-smart agriculture and forestry.
Will farmers, for instance, in Illinois, where a no-till was first developed in Dixon Springs, and in 2007, no-till acres for soybeans surpassed all other types of tillage. Will they be paid in the future, do you suppose, for those practices they currently have in place, rather than something that they might be incentivized to put into place?
Yeah, so this is a great question, and it's a really important one. You could imagine if you designed an offset market, for example, that only rewarded producers for future carbon gains, that would create a disincentive for producers that have already done those practices to actually maintain those practices. And so as you think about how do you design programs like that, you want to make sure that you design tools for early adopters to be rewarded. We're not talking at the federal level or anywhere else right now about a compliance program through a cap and trade program that allows offsets, not on the table in Washington. But there is a lot of interest in voluntary markets for offsets. And this issue of how you address early adopters is an important one. And you can imagine some of those voluntary programs looking back and thinking about how do you reward for some of the gains that have already been achieved by those producers. You could also think about other ways to deploy existing USDA farm bill incentives in a way that rewards those producers. As you also think about this Climate Smart Partnership initiative we've announced, you could imagine groups of producers that are interested in taking advantage of potential voluntary carbon markets, but you could also imagine producers that are interested in producing a climate smart soybean or climate smart corn or otherwise that may be of value to folks that are interested, folks that produce, that purchase those products, those commodities, to actually green their supply chain. And in that sense, you could actually reward producers for putting those climate smart practices on the ground. And that in and of itself may be enough to create an incentive there. So we think this Climate Smart Partnership Initiative may broaden the aperture a little bit around this, and as a result, create some new opportunities to create tools that not only create incentives for looking forward and for future adoption of conservation practices, but also look for ways to reward early adopters as well.
That was USDA Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy and Senior Advisor on Climate, Robert Bonney. He made a presentation during the 2021 November Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Conference and took questions during the event. The Climate Smart Agriculture and Forestry Partnership Initiative mentioned is supposed to finance the deployment of climate smart farming and forestry practices to aid in marketing of climate smart agricultural commodities. In its fall 2021 press release, USDA noted that, guided by science, the agency would support a set of pilot projects that provided incentives to implement climate-smart conservation practices on working lands and to quantify and monitor the carbon and greenhouse gas benefits associated with those practices. The pilot programs could be funded in part by the Commodity Credit Corporation, or CCC, using its specific power to aid in expansion or development of new and additional markets. We're now joined by Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, to discuss what's happening in the United States as far as the weather forecasts go. Hi, Don. Thank you for being with us today.
Good to be here.
It's November. Usually that means it's gray and it's wet. There's still some mostly soybeans out to be combined, some corn. I'm not so worried about that. Producers will get into it as long as they don't have really muddy fields, and I don't think that's the case anymore. But with soybeans, they need some time during the day for it to dry out. And then, of course, when the night begins to fall, things get tough again trying to get through the fields. The beans just don't cut. So what are humidity levels like for the next week? In fact, today it's kind of great. It would be fantastic if it was sunny and windy. That would be probably not too bad, but I'm not sure that's in the offing.
Well, it's not. As we go into tomorrow and Thursday, there is going to be some colder, moist air coming in from a pretty strong low for the second time in a week. We'll see a strong storm go across southern sections of Canada, and on the south end of the storm will be a cold front coming through, and we're going to see some areas of clouds and higher humidity and some light rain across central southern Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, parts of Missouri. Now, most of this is coming tomorrow into early Thursday. Once that system moves out, we actually do see a little bit of a drier air mass. It'll be a colder air mass, but a drier air mass. And that's usually the case. When you bring in some colder air, usually relative humidities can be lower. So after a period of wetness, I do see for the end of the week and into the weekend a drier air mass, less chances of precipitation, and maybe what folks are looking for to get that drier air to come on in.
Yeah, that sounds just like the ticket for them to get things started again to finish up soybean harvest across a lot of the Midwest. Both corn and soybean harvest, I think, is more than 90% done, so not much left to do. Turn your attention to the Great Plains areas and the Southwest Plains in particular for the hard red winter wheat growing regions. What do you think about that crop as it goes or soon to head into dormancy? Did they have enough time to get it up and running?
Yeah, they will. You know, the thing that those areas have really been lacking, at least when things are going in the ground, was good soil moisture. And that is something that is not going to be a factor in terms of getting any. So we're looking at generally a dry, breezy weather pattern in those Southwest Plains. And that is an area, Todd, that is really, in the last 2 months, really dried out and is going to definitely be a concern for a lack of precipitation going into the latter half of this fall and into early winter, especially with La Nina coming back. That is one area that I think will be susceptible to dryness.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Talk to you again soon.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois and Illinois Public Media.